This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by a candidate for the Senate 22 seat, Barry Crago. Hello, Barry, how are you?
Good morning, Kate. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you, and thank you for spending some time with 307 Net Info. I have some questions for you about your candidacy. And the first one is, you're currently the House District 40 candidate, but you've switched and you are standing for the Senate 22 seat, which is geographically not very dissimilar. But there is a difference between House and Senate. What made you think that you wanted to run for this position now?
So when Senator Kinski announced that he was not going to rerun and retire, I had no intentions originally in running for the Senate. I had planned to rerun for my House seat. In fact, I think maybe you and I talked a little bit about that even before Senator Kinski had mentioned he was, announced he was not going to run. After that announcement, I had lots of folks reach out to me, and I think it was just the push from folks both in Johnson and Sheridan County asking me to step up, run for that seat. Obviously, you represent twice as many people, you have a little bit bigger voice in the process, you're one of 31 instead of one of 62, and I think just wanting to continue my journey of representing the people of Sheridan and Johnson County and doing the best I can for the state of Wyoming is what made me decide to do that.
So you mentioned some of the differences between the Senate and the House of Representatives. What do you think are the qualities that maybe are different that are required from a senator than a representative?
Well, you who've been down there and watched, I think you have seen some of the differences. The House has a lot more going on, and there instead of 31 ideas, there are 62 ideas on how we should do things. And so oftentimes the Senate moves a little bit slower.
You would have thought it would go faster.
You would think so, but you've been down there, you've watched. That's not how it necessarily works. And so because there's less people, I think we can have deeper discussions on the Senate and dive into issues further than we sometimes do on the House side. And so I think that's one of the big differences is just how policy is approached on the Senate end versus the House end.
So you mentioned that, you were encouraged by various constituents to consider running for the Senate seat. Some people may look at this as a sort of, because your opponent, Mr. Jennings, is similarly wanting to move out of the House into the Senate. And some people may just look at this and say, oh, come on, this is just political musical chairs. You're all maneuvering and they don't like that. How do you respond?
I would respond by saying I think both of us are probably looking at it exactly the same, that it's our chance to continue to represent people we care about. And so it's not necessarily musical chairs. Lots of folks maneuver from the House down to the Senate. I think that happens a lot. You get your feet under you in the House. You learn how the process works. And, a large portion of the Senate are people who started out in the House. I couldn't tell you the exact number, but over half are people who started out in the House and then end up in the Senate. And so I would say, my opponent and I probably have the same thoughts on that.
Okay, thank you. So moving on, and this is an issue that you and I have discussed before, so I believe I know what you're going to say, but for those listeners who are not sure, or maybe they don't know you very well, you're a Conservative candidate, as is everybody who is standing in this Republican primary election. It is a Conservative election, essentially. But we are seeing differences in what sort of conservatism different candidates are proposing and are standing for, and there are various names and terms that have been attributed to that. In the last session, the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, a group who were quite clearly defined and have named themselves, seemed to be at odds with a different group who've been called, slightly confusingly, the Wyoming Caucus, and you've been more associated with that latter group. Could you please describe what your brand of conservatism is and what you intend to represent?
Sure. So I believe in smaller government and less taxes, the least amount of taxes possible. But where I'm probably different than some other folks is I still believe government has a purpose, and that is to provide essential services to the folks of our, of Wyoming, in particular Sheridan and Johnson County. We can talk about ambulance services, we can talk about law enforcement, we can talk about plowing the streets. We can talk about providing quality education to our kids. And so, yes, do I want to keep taxes as low as possible, like every other Republican? I sure do. But I also believe that we, you know, we craft policy through our budgets, and through that process, we decide how we're going to help people. And so that's my brand of conservatism, is as little as possible on the tax side, but at the same time, making sure we're providing those services that folks back home need.
Another value, which is not necessarily a governmental value, but is the issue of abortion, and the Republican Party has a very clear view on that. What is your own view of abortion?
So, people can go look at my voting record, but
have come under some criticism for your voting record on abortion.
Right, which is completely false, the criticism. If you go look at my voting record, I have voted for every single pro-life bill. I'm very pro-life, and I've actually fixed several of the bills that we have dealt with over the last 4 years so that they are constitutional. As several of them came out of committee, or as they originally, you know, came from the sponsor, they had constitutional issues. I worked on them to try to make them better and was successful in doing that. So I would respond to those people that are listening that, hey, go look at my voting record. You'll see where I ended up.
So would you say that either one of those groups aligns more with your own values, the Freedom Caucus or the Wyoming Caucus? If people were looking and saying, I'm not sure what kind of, where does this fit in this sort of groups, where would you say that you landed?
Well, so here's what I would say. I'm obviously affiliated with the Wyoming Caucus. I have been from the beginning. And the Wyoming Caucus isn't about policy. It's about civility. It's about, that group is more about having open discussions about hard topics and coming to solutions that help the people of Wyoming. It's not necessarily saying, you know, because to be honest with you, most of us down there, most of us Republicans, we agree on about 95% of policy.
I think that's why it can be perplexing for voters that supposedly everybody, I mean, it's an overwhelmingly conservative forum. And it can be confusing to see these divisions over policy, and it makes it difficult for voters to differentiate as to which candidate is best going to represent them.
And I think that's fair. I think it is confusing. But what I believe in is we need to have open and honest and frank discussions with each other without attacking each other. We don't have to be enemies, because we, at the end of the day, we do agree on the underlying policy issues. But how we get to the solution and how we get to the answer does matter. If we're treating each other with disrespect, that's not the way I want to go. And so I'm one of the guys that believes that, hey, let's have, you know, and that's really what the Wyoming Caucus is about, is this is a group of people that can sit down, have discussions, talk about things. We don't, you know, the group of people that hang out in that little area, we don't all agree on, I disagree with a lot of people in that group on what we should do policy-wise, but we're willing to have that hard discussion without disliking each other. And I think that's where we need to get back to in Wyoming.
And you've really answered what was going to be my next question, which is how you would work to overcome the divisions that are becoming increasingly apparent and build unity within the party. Do you see others, as you leave the House, do you see others who are more mindful to build unity, or are we going to see more division?
Well, ultimately, it's going to be up to the voters and who they select as their representatives. If they want to see a change in that direction, they're going to have to select people who are willing to have those discussions and willing to work towards unity within the party. We don't need a Freedom Caucus, and we don't need a Wyoming Caucus. We need a Republican Caucus. And that group should be working together to solve problems for the people of Wyoming. That's our responsibility. That's our duty. And I would like to see us not have either of those, and that where we all can just go back to the days where the Republican caucus would meet once a week and talk about these tough issues and hash it out and, you know, have those hard discussions. And I personally would welcome that.
Property tax is an issue which you've been very involved with. And in fact, I think you probably are extremely knowledgeable compared to many others. And you did bring a bill that ultimately was one of the very few that was successful, which created a cap So property taxes cannot go above a certain percentage of their former charge. So it remains a very challenging issue for homeowners. Property taxes remain very high. It is undoubtedly going to come up in the next session. What do you think would be the appropriate measure, and what would you support to bring property tax relief, significant property tax relief, to homeowners?
So, just a little bit of background, if that's okay. You know, I mean, we did pass the cap bill, which actually didn't, you know, it helped a lot of people around the state who live in counties where taxes were still going up dramatically. Johnson County, ours have leveled off a little bit, so I don't know as if, you know, I don't think as many people received the exemption on that in Johnson County, but Sheridan County, lots of people did. In fact, most people did. Park County, almost every single home got the exemption. Teton County, same thing. And I just wanted to then also remind the listeners, if you've lived in Wyoming for 25 years and you're 65 or more, you're going to, next year, you will get the 50% tax reduction too. And that's important because I've been out knocking doors and a lot of people aren't aware of that. So that's the other one that's going to help a lot of people in our counties because we do have an aging population here. So back to your original question though, which was, what are we going to do? Going back, you know, during session, the legislature overwhelmingly passed the 25% exemption, which would have helped every single homeowner in the state and cut their taxes back 25%. That was the one bill that the governor vetoed. And, you know, I didn't necessarily agree with that decision. I was supportive of the bill. What I think we will probably work towards and what I will work towards is something similar to that. That maybe has some, you know, maybe would apply to the second half of this year's taxes.
How would that then not be vetoed by the governor again?
Well, I think that's a conversation we'll have to have with the governor. If we do it early enough in session and not on the last day, we will have time to, you know, deal with that veto, unlike the last session where we passed all the tax bills on the very last day, which was not good planning on our part. You know, that's on us in the legislature. And so I think there's a, you know, the other thing I would say is it also depends. Joint Revenue has postponed all their meetings until after the November election to see what happens on the constitutional amendment. Because if the constitutional amendment passes, our possibilities of how to address this issue go up exponentially.
So could you just explain that to listeners, as having been sort of part of all those conversations and that process, could you explain what that constitutional amendment is? They may not understand.
Absolutely. So there is, on the ballot in November, there will be a question regarding a constitutional amendment to create a fourth class of property within the Constitution that only encompasses residential properties. And what that will do is, right now, the three types of property have different levying amounts within those, and they're all tied together based on the last time we amended the Constitution. And what this would do is take home residential properties out of that and allow us to create a much lower rate of assessment on homes as compared to other types of properties. And so, you know, I'm a proponent of that constitutional amendment because it will give us an option to lower taxes on people's homes, and it will, because a lot of the things we want to do, we can't do because of how the Constitution's written right now. And this would allow us to go in there and tweak what our laws say regarding that, those assessment rates.
And while we're just talking about process, maybe you would explain what it would need to pass. What would have to happen?
Yeah, so to go on the a constitutional amendment can be placed on the ballot with 2/3 of the legislature. But once it's on the ballot, then it just requires a simple majority of the folks in Wyoming voting for it.
Only a majority, or does it have to be 50% or more?
Yeah, yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you. So there is another initiative which is in play, confusingly also 50%. And that's a ballot initiative, and some people may have signed a petition in support of that to get it on the ballot, and I believe it's now planned for 2026 ballot, and that is to reduce property taxes by 50% across the state. Is that something that you would support?
So, to be honest with you, I don't know if I'd support it or not support it. I think that's the one the voters are going to have to do their own research. I mean, there's pros and cons to that. Is it a quick way to lower people's taxes? Absolutely. Do I think it's the long-term answer? No, because it's inflexible. And by that, I mean, if we take the power away from the legislature to move up and down as time goes on, as we have hard times, things change, as we have good times, things change. And so I'm a little bit nervous about that. I also understand the importance of getting the taxes lowered. But I also know what a 50% cut will do to our special districts, to our law enforcement, to our schools. They essentially will be cutting 50% of the people that work for them, which means a 50% cut in services to the people of Wyoming. And so that's the part that...
But it isn't equal across each county, though, is it? Some counties would not feel the sting of a 50% cut in funding to services as much as other counties might. Well, how would we fare in this district?
I think it would hit us fairly hard in Johnson County, I think, in Sheridan County too. Both of these two counties would not fare well with a flat 50% cut. Because the other thing,
explain why you think?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of people, when I'm knocking on doors, a lot of folks don't understand that when we pay our property taxes, all those taxes stay local. They don't go to the state. Those taxes go to your school district, they go to your county, they go to your special districts, which is, you know, your ambulance, your fire, things like that, weed and pest, predator districts, all of those things, law enforcement within the county, yes. And so those do not go to Cheyenne. They stay right here in Buffalo, Sheridan, Casey, Claremont, Story. I mean, they all stay local, and there's no way to replace that 50% if we cut it out. And so I'm still hopeful that the legislature is going to deal with the problem, because then we have the flexibility to change over time. Whereas if we just, enshrine that within the statute, the 50%, that's going to be really hard to get rid of. And like I said, I'm not opposed to the tax cut in principle. I just wish that we in the legislature could get it done rather than through the initiative, and we'd have more flexibility.
Okay. The Senate 22 district has a high proportion of seniors living within it. And indeed, so does Wyoming. As a state, we are older. We're skewed older than the national average. And that brings with it different challenges. What challenges do you think that it presents for this district? And what would you do to represent seniors within District 22?
So over the past 4 years, I think I've tried really hard to represent our seniors. You know, obviously taxes
Income may be a facet of
yes.
Senior living that you're no longer able to have, be able to supplement your income in the same way that you were able to do before. So fixed income is something you have to work with.
Yeah. So a couple examples. One, taxes. You know, there's a reason I worked really hard to get the cap through, and another reason I worked really hard to help get the long-term homeowners cap, you know, exemption through. That's going to help seniors. That's those folks that are on a fixed income who were planning on paying this much for taxes, and they had budgeted small increases every year. That's just how they've lived the last 30 years of their life. But now they're seeing 50, 60, 100% increases over the last 3 to 4 years. They can't afford that. And so I think that's the number one thing we got to do. And we did fix that. And I mean, we are going to help with that. I shouldn't say we fixed it, but we did provide some help to those folks that are on fixed incomes and older. There's also the refund program, but that one, it's a little more complicated, and not everybody applies for it, although a lot of the retired folks do.
I have spent some time with Carla Bishop, and in fact, you can go back and listen to an interview about exactly how you do it. It is quite rigorous as to how you can apply, who qualifies to apply, and then how much you get back. It's quite a lot of effort. It sounds good, but in reality, it probably doesn't apply to as many people as you would hope.
That's right. And so that legislation... isn't it, I don't think, as easy as the long-term homeowners, which will require you to go in. There's no income verification. You just sign an affidavit or an application saying, I've lived here this long and I'm this old. It's much simpler. The other thing I would say that we've worked really hard on over the last couple of years is making sure we have home services. I've worked hard with our local senior center. We've put, you know, I've brought amendments, helped bring amendments to put additional money in the budget so that home services don't go by the wayside. Every time we deliver food to someone's home and keep them out of long-term care, we're saving not only them money, but we're saving the state money, because those folks end up on Medicaid, and the, you and I as taxpayers end up paying for that. So the longer we can keep people in their homes, the better off we are. It's money well spent, and so that's one of the other things I've really focused on, is making sure our senior centers have the funding they need to operate and the funding they need to provide at-home care for folks. And so those are just a couple examples that I understand where we live, understand our demographics, and it's important to me that we take care of those folks.
The high cost of housing is a perpetual headache across Wyoming, and has been especially true of this region. It's been a challenge for employers. Both large employers and small employers who all have difficulties in recruiting good staff, because they want to come and live here, but then they can't find somewhere that they can either afford to buy or rent, but they also find the high cost of living is prohibitive as well. And so we see difficulties with employers managing to provide services to the quality and standard which they wish. What solutions do you have that could address this?
So two things I've been working on personally in, you know, having conversations with people around the state. Number one is we need to figure out a way to deregulate some of, you know, some of that industry. We need to figure out a way to make it easier for people to build, whether it be apartments or homes.
So what is difficult now?
There are just some of our processes, and not so much here. I think we're fine here. But as you look around the state, a lot of our municipalities and counties just have regulations that make it really difficult to get in and build. And every, you know, there's just tons of red tape. We can make that better. We can make that easier for them. And I think we need to, especially when it comes to some of these places where we need a lot of housing and we need it yesterday. The other thing that I think we could engage in is some grant and or loan programs where we help people build infrastructure out. And that's one of the things that I know, for example, the business council is looking at, is how can we help some of these developers come in and get them started? We're not giving them money, but we could loan them money at low interest rates and increase the availability, increase their desire to build in places like Buffalo and Sheridan, and start the ball rolling. But hopefully then it would snowball and we would have, you know, the places we need. Because right now, as you pointed out, there are very few houses for sale in Buffalo or Sheridan. And the ones that are for sale, they're not for starter families. Someone who, even with a good job, I mean, we have teachers who have been offered jobs in this district right here who had to turn the job down because they can't afford a house anywhere. I mean, they can't even find one to rent. There are no rentals. And any that are available to buy, they can't afford. And so it's something that we need to get a handle on, and we need to get a handle on it as soon as possible, or we're not going to have a workforce and or people like my daughters who are, you know, and your kids that are going off to college, and when they've decided to come back to Buffalo or Sheridan, aren't going to be able to find a place to live that they can afford. And pretty soon we end up like another county in our state, and I don't want that to happen.
So do you think that, I mean, you mentioned some statewide sweeteners to kind of help, maybe in districts that are different from ours right now, but do you believe in actively incentivizing development in our area so that we don't lose out to other communities who may be doing that?
I do. No, I believe that's something we should be doing as a community, and there's some folks that are working hard on that here in town that are really trying to tackle that issue, grab that tiger by the tail and do something, and I applaud them. They know who they are, and I appreciate all the work they're doing.
So housing and high cost of living and property tax burden and so on are all very real problems and issues for many citizens within the district. Maybe it's part of that, but Wyoming and Johnson County and Sheridan County in particular continue to experience very high difficulties with mental health issues. Our suicide rate is very high, very high compared to the nation, and our mental health services struggle to meet the need, and there may well be many people who aren't even reaching out for help. What measures do you support within this district for community members who may be struggling with poor mental health?
Well, you know, I'm a big proponent of this issue. You know where I stand on this. This is hugely important to me. You know, I have fought for funding, you know, for our 988 hotline so that people have a number to call and they know what that number is. And you know what? People know it. And it's getting used. And it has saved people's lives. It has put people in touch with resources they need to help them get through tough times.
That's only one. It's a significant safety net, but it's only one piece. What else do you think would be important?
Yeah, no, there's lots of pieces, some of which we're trying to address, and some of them I think we've yet to address. So I think we don't have enough people in the community that can provide the services, right? So you get someone in that needs the help. We don't have enough providers in our district, whether it be here or Sheridan, that can provide the services those people need. And I don't know if that's necessarily a money problem. That's just finding those folks and getting them here. I think there's also a money component to that. Are we putting enough resources, i.e. money, into this issue? And my answer would be no. I think we need to dedicate more money to mental health treatment. And then so that'd be part two. We need more resources, whether it's people, money, etc. We just don't have enough. The third thing is I think we need to continue to talk to our neighbors, talk to our friends, and have these conversations about this very issue so people know it's okay to call. You and I both know there is a stigma attached to this that we have to get rid of. Mental health illness is just like any other illness. We can treat it, but we can't treat it if we don't know about it. And so we need to get people to the right place so that they can get treated. And then the fourth thing I would say is, I'm not sure anybody anywhere is doing this, but I think the state, because of how small we are, I think we are in a unique position where we can actually leverage our resources and our relationships to connect people better than other places. What's happening in Wyoming should be happening in Wyoming because we do know each other. And I think we sometimes don't get the people where they need to go because we're not making those connections. And we need to figure out a way to do that, to leverage our relationships and resources to put people where they need to be.
So you mentioned when we first started talking that you were for small government. Is this appropriate for government to be involved in this issue? Is it appropriate that small government should be reaching out into this? What is not a traditional role of just governing? It's not keeping the lights on, the roads in good order and so on. Do you think that it's appropriate for government to be involved in mental health?
I do.
Because
we need to. We need to help our people. We provide health care. The government provides health care in other situations when folks need help and they can't get it for themselves. We don't leave them stranded. This is no different. And some of this doesn't cost money. Some of this is just creating awareness. Or if it does cost money, it's very limited. We're not necessarily paying for these services that people, we're just getting them connected to the services that they were going to pay for the services themselves. Some of this is just the role of education. And so does that cost minimal money? Probably. But is it costing hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars? The answer to that is no. And no, I do believe this is somewhere where we need to spend money.
So changing gears a little bit and giving you the opportunity, thinking about being a senator for District 22 and representing this community and knowing what you do about it already, what do you think are the three most pressing issues that are facing the district? We may not have discussed them already. What do you think would be your top three priorities?
So taxes is going to be on that, and I'm not, you know, taxes is still at the top of a lot of
Do you mean property taxes or broader?
Property taxes. Yeah. Property taxes, and you know, specifically, I think that's still at the top of most people's list. They, you know, they still want to talk about that, and we still got to find solutions because, to be honest with you, we didn't see the cut I was hoping to provide. You know, when you and I talked a year ago, mm-hmm. I was hoping we would have this package deal when we came back from session that included a fairly significant cut. We didn't get there. You know, for a certain segment of the population, they're going to, you know, if you're 65, the 65 and 25 people, they're going to get a significant cut, and I'm tickled about that, but everybody else isn't. Is theirs going up a lot? No, we were able to get the cap on, but we didn't go backwards any, and I'd like to see us work on that. So that's still number one. Number two, what I would probably say is the economy, and we don't talk about this enough. And what is our state going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now? What's our plan to make sure Wyoming has a viable economy so that your kids, my kids, our grandkids have a good job and a good place to work as they grow up and raise their kids in Wyoming? Because we sometimes lose focus that, you know, that's what keeps us all employed. That's what makes sure, you know, that's how we know we have bread and milk on the table is jobs and the economy. And we can't lose sight of that. We can't take our eye off that ball either. And so that's an important one to me that we don't talk about enough, especially when we get into these campaigns and we need to. And so that'd be on my list. And then we've already talked about this too, but the other one that is so important to me still is just mental health. And it's vitally, you know, there are so many people in our district and in Johnson County in particular that have been affected by that. And so I want to continue to see what I can do to help with that.
Thank you. And so in closing, is there anything that you would like to particularly say to voters as they weigh up their choices?
The only thing I would say is don't believe everything you read. And if you have a question about my voting record, call me. I will come to your door and explain every vote I've ever taken and tell you exactly why I did it.
Barry Crago, candidate for for Senate seat 22. Thank you very much indeed for your time and explaining what your campaign is all about.
Thank you, Kate. Appreciate the time.